And now we move on to questions. And when I call out your name, if you put your hand up, those with the microphones will get them to you. First question is from Philip Smith, Councillor Philip Smith. Over here to the right.
Mr. Lewis, thank you, firstly, for joining us here in conference today. I'd like to ask you a question regarding corporation tax. It has been said that we are behind the Scottish Parliament and the Welsh Assembly in considering the devolution of additional fiscal powers, as obviously most of the focus to date in Northern Ireland has been on trying to reduce corporation tax. Do you support setting up a new commission, like Calman in Scotland, for example, to consider this? And if so, what additional powers do you think that this commission should explore?
I'm really surprised that I got the question about corporation tax. It is a key question at the moment, and I think that we need to be clear about a number of things. First of all, there is a perception that my party, I think, is opposed to the devolution of corporation tax, and that's certainly, the Treasury was very resistant to it in the latter years of our period in government. I think we need to be straight about that. But I want to make it clear, I am open-minded. This is the second week in the job, and I am more than willing to engage with people on the argument about why devolution of corporation tax is the right thing to do. But can I be also clear to you, there are some people who present this as the magic bullet. If you get devolved responsibility for corporation tax, you're then able to reduce it, I guess that would be the plan. Somehow that will fix the Northern Ireland economy, jobs and growth will come in a significant way, and your economy, you know, all the difficulties that hold your economy back will be resolved. That is not true. Does corporation tax potentially have a role to play? Of course. But there are many other measures that can be taken both within Northern Ireland and, frankly, by the UK government, because, of course, one of the things is the general economic environment that the UK government creates. And one of the things I feel very... Towards our latter period in government, we decided that we needed to have an active industrial strategy where government was very proactive in supporting the private sector competing in a global economy. But that really only came in response to the financial crisis. Prior to that, we'd had a pretty laid-back, laissez-faire approach. Can I be clear, as somebody who's been a minister in Africa, Middle East, I was responsible for Britain's relationship with China at one time. You know, every other serious country in the world that wants to compete and win in this economy has a massive backing from its government in terms of the private sector. And I think the UK is quite a long way behind. And I think if you talk about adopting that active industrial strategy in terms of jobs and growth, I don't think we should apologise for saying that Northern Ireland should be one of our top priorities for all of the reasons that people in this room know. So yes, willing to have a look at the question, no commitment today that we've changed our position, but I am willing to have another look at it in terms of devolution. But do I think there's a lot more steps that need to be taken in terms of jobs and growth, which are not simply about corporation tax? We've talked about reducing business rates, VAT cut, for example. I think there are a lot of other things that we could be doing to support business as well.
Thank you very much. Could I now call on Councillor Joy Rosen to ask a question, please?
Thank you, Mr. Lewis, and I wish you all the best in your new role.
Thank you.
You mentioned parades and flags earlier. My question is in that detail. A reduction in VAT for the hospitality sector would certainly help some of the hard-pressed businesses in Northern Ireland, not least following a year of parades and protests. Does Labour have any plans in this area?
Well, we did say that we would reduce VAT for a temporary period to give the economy a much needed boost. I think it would be disingenuous of me to talk about a VAT reduction for a specific sector, because I don't think in the end governments tend to do that. But we have said all along that the cuts have been too fast and too deep. That would hold back recovery. Of course, now the economy is recovering to some extent, despite the fact we have a cost of living crisis, which we welcome. Okay, but do we think the pain of the last 3 years and the destruction that 3 years has caused was entirely necessary? Did they get the balance right between cuts and fiscal stimulus? I don't believe that they did. And I think that as a consequence of that, both individual citizens and families, but also business, has paid an unnecessary price. And can I say one other thing that really worries me? And it is relevant to Northern Ireland. This is the whole welfare reform question. Because what's happening, certainly in England, is that The people that Reg again is focused on, and others in your party, quite rightly, the NEET group, the people who are not in any form of educational employment and training. The problem is what's happening is with all the cuts, the level of the cuts, all the preventative work is going. And the only thing that public bodies now are reduced to doing, and it's getting worse and worse, is it fulfilling their statutory duties. Now, if you get to that position, you don't do any preventative work, and you are storing up all of the social problems that I referred to in my speech, which Northern Ireland is already having to deal with. Those situations, frankly, are going to get worse. So we have got to, I think, of course, welcome the fact the economy is recovering, while saying that for the vast majority of ordinary people, they are not experiencing any recovery because of the cost of living crisis. And we have got to reflect on the intergenerational problems that we are at risk of storing up unless we understand the importance, of course, of getting the deficit under control, but also alongside that of investment and jobs and growth. And it's nowhere more important than in this part of the United Kingdom.
Thank you very much. Could I just, one announcement, a colleague has sent a message that the rear window of a vehicle outside is open. It's somebody's leaned up against the doors at the back there. That has happened before in this room. It's ULZ 9355, ULZ 9355, you've left your back window open. May I now invite Skye Ochey to ask her question, if she raises her hand.
Despite recent positive trends in decreasing unemployment levels, youth unemployment remains stubbornly high here, with over one in five 18 to 24-year-olds out of work. What measures do you propose to deal with that at a Westminster level?
Well, I think I have sort of addressed that. I mean, I think that we need an active industrial policy. We need to look at the sectors within Northern Ireland where, frankly, you can accentuate your strengths. We know what Northern Ireland is good at. We know where the potential is. We could be doing a lot more to accentuate those strengths. As I say, it's very much these days a global economy. Of course, you have to support through some of the measures I've referred to small businesses, because I think 90%, I'm right to say, of the Northern Ireland economy is about small and medium-sized businesses. It's not about large corporations. Direct foreign investment is really, really important. So there's lots of things that the UK government can be doing. The way you approach welfare reform, I believe in welfare reform. I don't believe the status quo is acceptable where people are trapped on benefits and trapped in worklessness. And sometimes that's passed from generation to generation. Don't believe in any of that. Okay. But how you approach that is really, really important. For example, if you become punitive towards disabled people and mentally ill people, is that the kind of society we want to live in? My challenge, I guess, would be that when we came into power in 97, we introduced something called the New Deal. And this was basically a windfall tax on the utilities, and we used that money very specifically to get young people between the ages of 18 to 25 who had been unemployed into employment. And that, I think, was one of the great achievements of our government in its early days back in 1997. So I think the other question for the devolved government here in Northern Ireland is this. My experience of government, and Mike, I think, and Reg and others will understand this, that you can have the finest intentions in terms of developing policy and ideas and strategies and all the rest of it. If you are not able to transfer those into delivery and implementation on the ground that really makes a difference to people's lives, then you might as well go home and forget it. And one of the things I would ask you to think about is, are the programmes that are currently focused on getting young people in Northern Ireland back into work, getting out of this dependency trap, are they actually fit for purpose in terms of delivering real change? Now, part of that is about growing the economy, so there are jobs, but part of it is about the education system. And we know that the system at the moment educates some people to a really high standard, but leaves far too many young people in Northern Ireland behind. We also know, what about second chances? Just because a kid doesn't fulfil their potential by the age of 16, 17 or 18, what about when they get to 20, 21, 22? Because we all develop at different stages for different reasons. You know, I was responsible briefly in England, well, for several years, for an adult basic skills programme in terms of literacy and numeracy. And it was heartwarming to meet men and women in their 50s who all their lives had kept it from their families, that they couldn't read or write. Now, why is this relevant to young people? Because when we got those 40 and 50-year-olds to read and write, they were parents and grandparents. So as well as their self-esteem and confidence growing, they suddenly saw the relevance of learning and education to their kids and their grandkids, yeah? Because there's a whole swathe of people who don't think education's for them. They kind of resign to a life which is on the margins, and young people in that category. And the other thing about Northern Ireland that makes it very different is, look, you'd only have to look at every conflict situation around the world. That is the breeding ground for extremism. It's the breeding ground for the disconnect by people like on this platform and ordinary people. And we've got too much of a disconnect in the rest of the United Kingdom between the political class and ordinary people. But it's even more of an issue and a challenge, and the stakes are much higher, in my view, in Northern Ireland. So, of course, Westminster must play its part and show leadership on active industrial strategy, jobs and growth, and all the rest of it, support for small businesses. But also, I think Northern Ireland has an opportunity to learn from the best where countries have actually shifted this question of intergenerational deprivation and youth unemployment.
Thank you. May I ask Sam Nicholson to put forward his question, please?
Shadow Minister, first of all, thank you for a very thought-provoking speech. My question is, as a local architect, we work very closely with local companies, huge, large ones, small ones, medium-sized, and there's a common concern, which is the rising energy prices. Now, in particular, the larger firms, you're paying probably some of the highest energy prices in Europe at the moment. So I suppose my question is, at your recent conference, your leader announced a price freeze on energy prices, and I suppose I really want you to outline to the conference today how that's going to impact on Northern Ireland.
Well, as far as I'm aware, the energy market is different, and therefore an energy price freeze in the rest of the UK is not directly transferable to Northern Ireland. I think, though, the principle is, and this is the principle, that for a long time, politicians have said we should, in any circumstances, interfere in the market, even when the market is ripping consumers off. And Ed Miliband has said enough is enough. If a market is not working, if it is anti-competitive, if it is ripping consumers off, whether it be citizens or businesses, then of course politicians have a duty to act in the public interest and say this does not have to be like this. And the one thing that nobody's been able to say about that policy is it's not practicable or workable. So I think there's a challenge for all politicians, including in terms of the context of the All-Ireland energy market, to look at whether people are being ripped off, whether it is anti-competitive, and whether similar decisive intervention needs to be taken. And let me say this as well. It makes me laugh. This is apparently socialism. Apparently intervening to protect the consumer is socialism in action. And yet, subsidising people's mortgages with vast amounts of state intervention and public money, that's fine. That's kind of all right, that kind of intervention from the current government. How is that different in terms of the state deciding to intervene in what traditionally has been left to the market? So I think this whole debate about many of these industries that perhaps in the past were in state ownership or national ownership that were privatised, fine, I don't think anyone's advocating they be brought back into state ownership. But frankly, they've been allowed to get away with too much for too long. And we've said in this context, certainly, and in the payday lender context, you would have heard the announcement Ed Miliband made about that this week, that it's time for politicians to act in the public interest.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Mark Woods.
Mr. Lewis, first of all, I'd like to thank you for addressing our conference today. And my question is, with the European election imminent and the Tories setting out their plans for an in-out referendum, what is the current position of the Labour Party on whether the UK should remain within the EU? What needs reforms, and what is your view is the potential impact of business of withdrawal? Thank you.
A minor question. the first thing I would say is that our position is this. The Eurozone is in crisis and has been for a long time. That has had a terrible impact on many economies in Europe and jobs and growth across Europe. Our priority at the moment, our focus at the moment, should be on fixing that and getting our economy moving again and creating the jobs that are necessary. We should not be distracted by that sort of political instability and uncertainty that David Cameron has signalled by saying we're not going to have a referendum tomorrow or next week or next year, we're going to have a referendum in 2017. We think it's a complete distraction. Do we rule out under any circumstances a referendum? No. We've said that we don't rule it out. Of course we're willing to contemplate that that may at some point in the future be necessary. But we think it's the last thing we need right now. We already have provision in terms of our law, which says if there were to be significant treaty change, that automatically would trigger a referendum on that treaty change. So our position is simple. This is not the time to play politics, because at the end of the day, David Cameron did not want to make that speech he made on Europe. He made it because he's no longer in control of his own party. This is a man who started off talking about going green, the big society, moving to the centre. All of that has been dissipated as a consequence of his own party and to some extent the phenomena of UKIP. Now, moving on from that, do I believe that in any context, when we're having an argument, with a debate with the British people about the EU, I think it would be crazy in terms of the way the world is changing for us to retreat and leave the European Union. And I'll give you a good example. When we chaired the G8 relatively recently here, what did David Cameron make as his top priority? Economically, Syria was, for the right reasons, his top priority, but other than that, it was to achieve a historic EU-US trade agreement. Now, if he thought the achievement of a historic EU-US trade agreement was massively important to our future prosperity, why on earth would he want to collude with and contemplate the prospect of our country leaving the European Union? Now, does the European Union need reform? Wow, it needs reform. I spent so much of my ministerial life in Brussels and Strasbourg. Of course it needs reform. It's too bureaucratic. It's too distant and remote from the people that it claims it's there to serve. To some extent, we're losing the argument. So I think, of course, we need to, those of us that believe in the EU, put forward a compelling and a convincing reform agenda. But is it right in the context of China and India and that changing world for Britain to retreat and leave the European Union? I think it would be a disaster. Final point is this, how we make the case. One of the problems is, if you think about the things that matter to people in their everyday lives, energy prices, climate change, where are the jobs of the future coming from for you and your kids? The answer to all of those questions is not factors within our borders. The answer to all of those questions is global. And yet we don't talk to people about Europe like that. It's either an intellectual elite which talks about Europe or fundamentalist anti-Europeans who talk about Europe. We have got to start talking to people in a language which means something in terms of their everyday lives, their energy bills, climate change, the environment, as I say, and where are the jobs of the future coming from. So we also have to recognise, those of us who believe in Europe, we are partially responsible for this Euroscepticism, because we have never, ever spoken to people in a language that they understand about why Europe should matter to them and be relevant to our collective future.
The next questioner is Alan Durish.
Hello, Mr. Lewis.
Hi.
All the best for your new role. My question ties in with Skies in many ways. The Ulster Unionist Party have identified sectors like the creative industries and agri-food to provide economic growth. What sectors do you think we should be focusing on in Northern Ireland to stimulate growth? Thank you.
It would be incredibly presumptuous after 13 days for me to tell you. I mean, the better way of me answering that question is this. You know where you are good at the moment and where with a little bit of investment and support you could be good in the future. And that's where the UK government has a really big role to play. Whether it's UK trade overseas, whether it's the Foreign Office, all the rest of it. That is where I think we historically have not been good enough. We are in a globally competitive environment and we should be working with the Executive and the Assembly, the UK government, to focus in on those sectors where there is massive potential for Northern Ireland, where there is niche potential for Northern Ireland to make a case for. And we should be really going out there and attracting the jobs and the growth that you need. So that's my honest answer. Obviously, over the next few weeks and months, I hope I'll learn more about different sectors of the economy and maybe be able to answer your question a bit more fully the next time around.
Thank you very much. Neil Gartland.
Hello. My question is just, the recent economic pact announced by the First and Deputy First Minister and the Prime Minister set out the potential for enterprise zones in Northern Ireland. How do you see these taking shape?
Well, again, it's be presumptuous, I think, of me. I mean, I think that, first of all, I think it's a good thing. I think you've welcomed it on the whole. I think it's a good thing. I think having place-based, holistic approaches to the different things that come together that make a difference in terms of the economy. I've spoken in my speech about the link between educational underperformance, low skills, worklessness, intergenerational deprivation, all of that. Looking at, as I say, often not just sectors have strengths, sometimes regions and parts, communities have particular strengths where they can grow. So I think the concept of those zones is very much a good one. But again, you have to transform the concept into some sort of meaningful change. And I guess what the people of Northern Ireland will say in 2, 3, 4 years' time is, as a result of having those enterprise zones, how have our lives got better? Are there more jobs? Are there more educational opportunities? Is our economy moving forward? Is this a better place to live? I am a fan, though, of place-based initiatives, because I think my experience of government is lots of silos. And the silos don't work. And politicians talk about joined-up government, and they never join it up, really. So I think place-based working is a good thing and is the way to go.
Josh Lawry.
I know you have touched on this slightly during some of your other answers, but a recent report from Sheffield Hallam University said that our welfare reform will take £750 million out of the economy in Northern Ireland and will hit us harder than the rest of the UK. Does the Shadow Secretary of State share the Ulster Unionist Party's concern about the aspects of the current bill and the detrimental effect on the Northern Ireland economy?
I think yes, it's the straight answer. It will have a very detrimental impact on the economy. It will also have a very detrimental impact on many vulnerable people. Of course, there are always people who abuse the system, and they should be dealt with in a very tough and appropriate way. There are also people who are trapped on welfare who, with a little bit of help, could get out of that and get into employment with support and perhaps have a better life. But there are, there is such a significant proportion of the so-called welfare bill, most of which is being spent to support people, older people, disabled people, people with chronic conditions, that we would all in this room want to support those people. So it's the balance. I also think the issue of public-private sector in Northern Ireland is really important. There is a danger that the rhetoric says we need to rebalance from public to private. Well, of course we do. This Northern Ireland is too dependent on the public sector and doesn't have a sufficiently developed private sector. But if you try and change that too quickly in a reckless way for ideological political reasons, you are likely to store up, as I've said earlier, a whole range of problems. It will take time to rebalance. It won't happen overnight. So whilst that rebalancing is taking place, to decimate the public sector, in my opinion, is not a very sensible way forward. You could have had deficit reduction, which is necessary. I would be the first to say this country needs deficit reduction. It could have been done in a more gradual, a more considered and a more measured way. The consequences of our abolition of the bedroom tax are really important for Northern Ireland, because at the moment, the danger in Northern Ireland is if your executive and assembly decide not to implement the Welfare Reform Act, there is a tremendous financial penalty, as I understand it, potentially, in terms of the block grant. Therefore, that specific policy of ours would have a directly positive, beneficial impact for Northern Ireland.
Thank you. We have 3 final questions. The next one is from Alex Redpath.
Mr. Lewis, Northern Ireland has made some great advances in the area of research and development. However, we have the lowest number of patents applied for and granted of any region of the UK. What more can be done to encourage and assist more businesses, especially SMEs, to get involved in R&D and innovation?
Well, I need to be here a little longer than 13 days to give you a considered answer to that question. But, I mean, I'm happy to engage with people who are, you know, interested in this area, who think that Northern Ireland should be doing much better in this area, because, again, I think we could be asking the right kind of questions in the Westminster Parliament to try and move that along in a positive way. So if you want to chat to me perhaps later, we can perhaps get a group of people together and talk through some of those issues.
Thank you very much. Can I now have Councillor Glenn Barr, please?
Thank you, Eivin, and welcome to Ulster. Tourism is a key driver of the economy. Northern Ireland has been fortunate to host a number of international events, such as G8 Summit, World Police and Fire Games. Do you agree that these events are vital in boosting Northern Ireland's potential as a tourist destination?
I do. I'd like to say that I think the Prime Minister deserves credit for choosing Northern Ireland to host the G8. I know from my own city of Manchester, two things transformed Manchester, really. One was deciding to bid for the Olympics, even though at the time we had very little prospect, because that brought together the public and the private sector working together in a way that they'd never worked before. And then when we got the Commonwealth Games, that was a really big moment. And the legacy of that has stuck with Manchester in many, many ways. All I would say to you is the crucial thing for politicians and others is to make sure there is a legacy. And the legacy is not just about rhetoric and woolly words and little bits of initiatives. Can you really use those big moments as a platform to go further? And I'm worried about the London Olympics. I think it was the most amazing moment for us. It was a source of massive pride, I think, for everybody in the United Kingdom. And, you know, we showed people we could actually pull it off, a great big global event, as well as obviously do well in the sporting competitions. But the legacy is being squandered already, because you need to seize the moment, you know, and build the momentum. And if you take your foot off the accelerator, very quickly you lose the potential gains. So that's all I would say to you. Of course, massive opportunities as a result of these events, massive potential. I mean, I'm going to get round Northern Ireland, but it's a beautiful place as well, you know, in terms of tourism. So, absolutely.
Final question, briefly, Michael Long.
Mr. Lewis, many of the current coalition's national lending initiatives, such as the National Loan Guarantee Scheme, appear not to be working or impacting Northern Ireland and our banks. How would a Labour government ensure that these national schemes would not exclude Northern Ireland?
Well, first of all, it's scandalous what's happening in terms of banks and small businesses. I mean, the failure of financial services, the banking system, we know about the past failure, but the fact that even now there's a lot of rhetoric around supporting small businesses, responsible lending and all the rest of it. If you speak to small business people, they don't see any real progress or very, very little. So we have to change it. We have actually come forward, the Labour Party, with a specific proposal. We will introduce a network of regional banks, and those regional banks will have a specific remit to lend to, in a responsible way, of course, to small business. Also to understand the communities in which they are operating. Again, back to this argument about what sectors are growing, where there's the potential, where should we be, you know, supporting and stimulating through the relationship between the banks and the small businesses. Now, I think what I need to do in this job is think about how will that network of regional banks apply to Northern Ireland? And at the moment, I'm not clear about that. So one of the things that I would like to look at, which would be a kind of a tangible, practical thing, perhaps, is, as I say, how could we make sure that... Because this is not sort of a maybe. This is an announcement we will do if we're elected in 2015, create this network of regional banks to deal with the very issue that you've just described. So I want to talk to people about how we might make that relevant to Northern Ireland.
Well, look, Ivan, you've stood up there and taken a barrage of questions. We haven't asked you perhaps one about flying the flag in the City Hall, but we'll wait till you're in office a wee bit longer before we hit you with that sort of thing. So on behalf of the party, can I thank you and your colleague for coming at very short notice just into the job and for standing and answering so many questions from the floor. So our very warm thanks. I think he'll probably regret the Protestant Jew or Catholic Jew one. That'll come back to haunt him, I rather suspect. But thank you once again.